Hi, and welcome to the Irish American Politics Show. I'm your host, Gina London. In this special series, we set out to explore and examine through the eyes of the Irish American voter one of the most divisive presidential elections in U.S. history for president. And joining us for this very first special episode is Fiona McEntee. Fiona is the founder and the managing partner of McEntee Law Group, a renowned immigration law firm based in Chicago. Fiona, so much to talk about, and I'm so grateful that you're here. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Gina.
Fiona, you're an expert in immigration. You're a member of the American Immigration Lawyer Association, and you're the chair of the Media and Advocacy Committee for that group, and you've got all sorts of multinational clients and celebrity and athlete clients. But I'd like to start with the fact that earlier this year, you wrote a children's book on immigration and about the American dream. Can you set the picture for us a little bit about, I'm an American who lives in Dublin, you're an Irish woman who lives in the US. What is it about that American dream?
So yeah, I mean, what a year to release a book. The book was released in January, and we had a lot of events planned over the course of the year. And I was really excited about going into, and I did have the chance to go into some schools, but just to talk to children here about this idea, this concept of the American dream and what that means to us. To be honest, I feel very fortunate that in my daily life and my work that I get to meet so many people from really diverse backgrounds, industries. And, you know, their idea of the American dream is all different. Everyone has a different idea of what it is. And, you know, really just talking to kids about how everybody's dream is just as valuable as the next. You know, there's no hierarchy in my mind of, you know, immigrants that should deserve to be here or who should get the opportunity to come. And so, yeah, it's just that idea of kind of sharing different characters. They're based on clients of mine to just show kids the types of immigrants that are coming to the US today and to really hopefully have a bit more of a positive conversation around immigration, because I think a lot of people are, you know, just upset about the negative stuff that we keep hearing about immigrants. And it's certainly not true. And I can see all different sides of immigration. So that was kind of the motivation behind writing the book.
And that's the motivation about the writing the book. And those were the children that you were speaking to from that perspective to help re-educate them or educate them on possibilities of immigration, the variety of different people that can come. But speaking specifically now on the Irish immigration story, well, a lot of the ways that Irish people get first introduced to the United States could be through that college experience, that J-1 visa. And in fact, as I was doing my research to talk with you, since you're the expert, I was really struck. I didn't realize that across Europe, more Irish immigrants, despite the smaller population, come to the U.S. through that J-1, or came, that's an operative word we'll talk about in a minute, than any other country in Europe. Talk about what's happened now under the Trump administration, even just in June, with that J-1 visa.
So the J-1 has actually been on the chopping block for this administration for quite some time. And I think you saw our president, Michael Dee, came out to speak out about in support of the J-1 program to say, I believe he said he had himself had participated in the J-1 program, and just talking about the importance of that kind of cultural exchange and the idea of coming here and being able to get the opportunity. And Americans, there's a reciprocal nature to one of the J-1s as well. So Americans can go to Ireland and participate and work the same way that the Irish can come here. So, I mean, I think it's this administration, the Trump administration, though, has really tried to restrict immigration in so many different ways from day one. And what you saw in June was, in my mind, you know, using the coronavirus, the pandemic, as a pretext to further restrict immigration. So as it was, they were trying to limit immigration. And then, you know, the pandemic happened, and then we saw all these additional restrictions come, including a ban on the issuance of new J-1s, new H-1B visas, and there was a green card ban, and then there's a travel ban. So, I mean, we were collectively referring to this, all these bans, as Banzilla. You know, our immigration lawyers, right? There's some litigation in relation to Banzilla, because it's like, which ban are we talking about? There have been so many. And so I think it wasn't really surprising that they took this opportunity to further restrict immigration into the US.
And so even though it wasn't a surprise, because yes, you're right, the moment that he went down the escalator, Trump, when he was announcing his presidency in 2015, he was talking already about Mexican immigration. And then, of course, there's the wall. And then his first act was the Muslim ban on immigration, the travel ban. And then now that it continues, though, amidst, as you said, the coronavirus and the other situations, is there then a concern that there's not enough that can combat it or that can take on Banzilla, as you said? What are the efforts that are being put in place to try to mediate or moderate, or is it a wait and see for the election? What can you do in the meantime?
It's certainly not a wait and see. And I think what you've seen throughout this administration is immigration lawyers like myself, my colleagues through the American Immigration Lawyers Association are challenging a lot of these things in court. And so just as recently as last week, there was oral arguments in a hearing in Banzilla. So a group of immigration lawyers challenged it on behalf of clients in a variety of situations. So some of them, let's say, had won the green card lottery and were, you know, now banned on coming to the US. So essentially they would lose their turn at getting green card through the green card lottery. There were other groups that were there on behalf of H-1B visa holders who were stuck abroad when all the pandemic happened. And now as because of these travel bans, they're not able to come back into the US. So, I mean, you've seen immigration lawyers. I believe there hasn't been a decision from the judge in that case, but that's ongoing at the moment. You know, we've kind of seen, we saw what happened with DACA with, you know, the deferred action for childhood arrivals, if people are familiar with that. For the Dreamers. So this is immigrant youth who came to the US as children and who were undocumented through no fault of their own. And so anyway, they had protection under Obama and that case went to the Supreme Court. And now today, as I speak, this administration, the USCIS, so the agency responsible for taking cases and reviewing them, is refusing to accept new DACA cases, notwithstanding the Supreme Court decision. So this is the types of, this is the type of stuff that we're seeing.
Well, we have an administration in the United States right now that refuses subpoenas, that refuses, that fires independent investigators that are going through an investigating element that the Trump administration doesn't like or feels that it's too close to them. What can be done when the law isn't being adhered to?
Yeah, I mean, it's scary. It really is, because you think, you know, look, you're not always going to agree with every Supreme Court decision, but you don't get the, you know, this is the separation of powers exists for this very reason, right? There has to be checks and balances on power to prevent one body, you know, one arm of government from kind of taking over. And so that should scare everybody, right? You know, regardless of if you agree with the Supreme Court or not, you don't get the right and, you know, to make that decision about implementing it or not. So I think, again, what we're seeing is we're going to be seeing more litigation in relation to this. And in the meantime, you know, I have so many DACA clients that we're getting ready to file for new cases. And now, because of this, we don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, these are people's lives that are, you know, these are human beings. They're young, they're youth with so much promise and, you know, they just want to work hard. And, you know, this is what we've seen. It's like the dehumanization. And, you know, you need to remember that all these immigrants that you talk about, you know, they're people and they're human beings. And I think that that's been forgotten about here.
And, you know, sometimes we hear, because we try to, there's a lot that's going on about the Trump administration is this and characterizing it. And to take a step back, though, and go on the other side for a second, the other side sometimes is being portrayed as open borders. What would you say is a solution or a series of solutions to making immigration maybe more tenable for both sides? Or how do you see it going forward?
Yeah, I think that's a big misconception that people on, you know, the left, the Democrats, that immigration lawyers like myself are for open borders. I mean, we all agree that there needs to be a system in place. I think that the system, you could just look around and see what's happening, though, with the system. I mean, there are 12 million or so undocumented immigrants here in the US that have been here for a long time, that are contributing, that are paying taxes. I think, you know, if you poll the majority of Americans, you know, they tend to agree with reform, you know, a solution for these undocumented immigrants. You know, a lot of times people say, well, if they've been here and we just want people to pay taxes and, you know, and they're doing all that. You know, if you ask the majority of Americans how they feel about some type of permanent status for Dreamers, a lot of times they actually agree. You know, the majority of Americans agree that there should be a solution. So, I mean, I think that it's not fair to say that that there's, you know, that on the other side, and I hear it all the time. And I also think, you know, you can look at immigration in a number of different ways. So you can look at the humanity of it, but you can also look at the economic aspect of it. You know, one of the things that the administration tried to do during the pandemic was prevent foreign students. There was a threat to deport foreign students if they were studying online. And, you know, there was all talk on all different sides. People were saying, well, why do they need to be here if they're studying online? And I had actually recently before this written an opinion piece in USA Today that spoke about the benefit the foreign students bring just by being in the US, by living here. They're contributing, it's like 41 billion. They're creating almost 500,000 jobs every year just by being here in the US. And so, you know, there's many ways, I think, to look at this. But I think, and that's something where it's hard to argue with the economics, right? It's hard to argue with those types of figures and job creation, especially in a pandemic where we really need people to kind of reinvigorate the economy.
And see, when you're talking right from there, I mean, you're a storyteller, you're a champion in your area, you're writing articles, you're in the press. Is there more that needs to be done to tell the story if the litigation itself isn't working or going slowly through the legal process? What more can be done to tell the story of immigrant contribution from a cultural and, as you said, so importantly, an economic point of view? Why is that story not sinking in, it seems?
Yeah, I'm really glad that you asked that question. And actually, we are at the moment, we're preparing to launch a podcast that's like is actually based on this idea of storytelling. So it's going to be called Immigration Revelation. And the idea is that we're highlighting immigrant, a lot of them are clients of ours who work in different industries, who maybe have set up a startup company and have raised over 30 million to, you know, the love story fiance that are now separated because of COVID. But I think that is really, Gina, you're so right. I mean, we need to put the human experience back into the immigration debate, because I think that that's what's been happening, is that it's been a bit of a dehumanization of immigrants. And I think people don't really relate to statistics. They relate to human beings and their stories. And I think that we do need to start sharing more of these stories, because I think that when you really meet a dreamer, when you hear, you know, what they've gone through, when you see what they want to do, I think it just adds a different level to the conversation. And I think that we all should be trying to share these stories. And it's not, you know, it's not like we're creating a positive, you know, there's people have gone through struggles and, you know, and they're, and so, yeah, I think that really is what we need to be going towards, the litigation in conjunction with storytelling of some of these amazing immigrant experiences.
I'm an immigrant here in Ireland. You're an immigrant in the United States. Each one of us as immigrants has a story. And if there's a way to amplify those stories so that they can be heard, and so that connection between human beings, as you said, can be made, and not this continuation of fear or us and them, and of this division that would you say is being deliberately stoked? And what's the motivation behind what the administration has been rolling back and implementing during its time so far, would you say?
Yes, I think it has been a deliberate us versus them divide. I mean, we saw it from the start. You know, a lot of times when we say, oh, I can't believe this happened. But when we look back at the Trump campaign, you know, all the divisiveness was there between the wall, you know, the discussion about Mexican immigrants, you know, Muslims, the threats. But I mean, it's really been across the board. So people say, oh, well, I just don't like undocumented immigrants. You know, what this administration is doing, though, is honestly trying to restrict it in so many different ways. They're trying to limit the family-based immigration system. And they're using horrendous terms to talk about family immigration, which is really based on very immediate family members.
Like what? What are they saying?
Like the chain migration term, it's just a horrible term, right? And I think that you hear that, and you know, and then you look at though what's going on. Like Melania Trump, her parents are in the US, which I believe through the family-based immigration system, while simultaneously the administration was trying to limit the ability of a US citizen to sponsor his or her parents for green cards. So, I mean, you just need to look at what's happening, what they're saying, what they're doing. There can be some hypocrisy there. And so I do think that it's a deliberate attempt to be divisive. And I don't feel like it needs to be that way. I think that I firmly believe that we can get closer to agreeing on things. And I don't want to always preach to the choir. That's not what we're about either. We want to have these conversations with people. We want to hear, I want to talk to people who don't agree with me. And like on that foreign student issue, so we can really talk about the issue, talk about the facts, and just see, can we get a little bit closer to agreeing on something? Because I do believe that that can happen, but we just need to have these conversations.
Speaking of conversations and building communities around conversations, and you were talking about some of the work that your association and others are coming together, Bandzilla, for example, to take on. Where can people, is there a resource, if you're listening or watching this right now, is there a place as an immigrant or someone who's interested in more immigration stories or what's going on, is there a resource or a place that people can come together to bring those conversations to the fore?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of different grassroots advocacy organizations that have been doing work in this space for a long time. So I actually, my book online, so it's ouramericandreambooks.com. I have a page where I list a lot of the advocacy groups. And so it could be, let's say, United We Dream, that's doing work for dreamers. Then there is Define America, that is kind of again, just kind of grassroots advocacy around immigration, and the American Immigration Council is fantastic. Al Otro Lado is a nonprofit that's doing work at the border. So there's lots of different places. I'm on Twitter. My handle is US Visa Lawyer. There's a lot of my colleagues on Twitter, is a really good place for sharing stories and kind of real-time advocacy. So I think that there are lots of resources, and our podcast, when it will be available later on this month. And so, yeah, I think that if you want to seek out these stories, there's lots of places that you can go to.
And if you were thinking of the next under 70 days that we have until the actual election for president in the United States, and you mentioned there isn't a wait and see attitude, that there's litigation and there's pressure that's ongoing, but is there then a call to action right now that you would urge people in the U.S., people who have interests outside the U.S. to make a difference, to try to make a change?
Yeah, there definitely is. And it depends on where you want to focus your efforts. So for me, voter turnout is something that I'm trying really hard to work on, especially in areas that have been historically lower represented. And, you know, there's a lot of voter suppression going on as well. And we're in the pandemic. You know, there's a whole concern about the postal service here. So there's a lot of issues. But one thing that I signed up to do was to send a whole bunch of postcards through this initiative to try to connect with voters who maybe have not voted in the past. So I think there's a lot of different ways that you can get involved depending on, and this is a bipartisan thing. You know, I feel like we should encourage full voter turnout, regardless of who you're going to vote for. You know, exercising your right to vote is just so fundamental. And I think nobody should be trying to restrict that on either party, on either side of the aisle. That is something that should be a nonpartisan issue. We should all agree that we should want as many people to vote as possible. And we in Ireland, we know exactly how many people fought for that right for us, and, you know, and for women. And so, you know, minorities, everybody appreciates, I think, how sacred that right is. And so it's something that we need to really protect here. So I think, yes, we're living in somewhat of a pressure cooker between the, you know, the campaign, between the virus, between, you know, there's so many things going on in the US. But I think that there's a good way to feel better. You can turn your frustration into action and figure out what you can do, where, you know, you're comfortable helping out. But there's phone banking, so there's lots of different ways. But I personally, I'm getting a box of 300 or 400 postcards delivered to me that I will be sending out via USPS to support the postal service here. So, but yeah, that's one thing I'll be doing over the next few weeks.
When you talk about the American dream, one part of that is learning what that participation experience is like and how you can contribute and join in your voice and be part of the process. And like you said, opening it to everyone so that everyone can raise their voice. As we're looking toward the future, and you talked about overhaul, that needs to be a system. What role does technology play in maybe accelerating the process? Or do you see it as it being utilized enough? Or is it a political will that's not using it enough? Or what are you seeing as some of those ways to accelerate and maybe streamline and simplify the process, if any?
For the voter process or just the
No, for immigration,
participation?
for moving
Oh, for
people through.
immigration.
So there aren't dreamers that are living in a limbo for decades.
Yeah.
What are some of the overhaul processes, if there were the political will, that potentially could be already deployed because the technology is available? Or what do you see as some of the things that are keeping us in that limbo situation where the rhetoric rises above the solutions?
I mean, I think that just in terms of the actual system, it is pretty old-fashioned as far as, you know, we paper file a lot of applications with the government. You know, there's a lot of stuff. So I think that obviously modernizing the actual procedures would probably go pretty far to helping immigrants get access to, you know, to this type of representation as well. I think that, you know, there's certain legal clinics that are being done online, and whether if people can't afford to hire an attorney, there's a lot of pro bono support that's happening. You know, Zoom legal clinics, we've been doing that through a nonprofit here in Chicago, Irish Community Services, that is supported by the Irish government's Diaspora Immigrant Support Program. And so that type of thing, I think, can help give people access to attorneys, which is really key as well to get, because immigration law is so complicated and you really need individual advice in relation to your situation. So I think that's super important as well. And then I think, you know, just as far as technology, I think we need to encourage immigrant entrepreneurs in STEM fields to come to the US. You know, under Obama, there was a program that was started called the Startup Visa Program. It was a startup parole program for people who had created companies in tech or, you know, engineering, science, in one of these STEM fields. And that program was basically eliminated by the Trump administration. So we need a recognition that STEM and these technologies, that it's important and it's the way of the future. And I think, you know, the US needs to recognize that because we're not going to be able to be competitive with the rest of the world when we look at countries like Ireland and Canada and, you know, lots of other countries that are absolutely welcoming these immigrant technology entrepreneurs. You know, that's also what we need to be doing here to ensure that we're going to be able to compete with the rest of the world.
Well, it's fascinating that you say that because, in fact, the reason that I'm able to live and work in Ireland is because I have been accepted through the Irish version of that, which is the STEP program. So the Startup Enterprise program, where I have developed my own platform and it was approved. And think about the contributions that the United States right now, by these things being rolled back, are missing out on. And the immigrants who are eager to come and eager to contribute in a legal process, but are being prohibited simply by there not being access afforded to them or programs like you're describing. If Fiona, there's one, you've talked about the voting process and getting out in some form. You've talked about ways to amplify the voice, your voices by going to different platforms and different resources that are available, also by listening to the voices that are going to be amplified from the podcast and the various things that your association and your groups are putting forward. As we wrap up and we talk about the American dream, what's happened to dismantle it in many ways through this administration, and what potentially is the future in systematic overhauls or process reform or simply a new mindset? Is there a final thought that you would like to share with the viewers and the listeners from Irish American Politics for our first episode today?
Well, I'm so honored to be here on your first episode, and I'm really glad to hear that we're having these conversations. I mean, I do think that, you know, the Irish Americans in the US need to remember that it wasn't so long ago that Irish immigrants were also not very welcome to the US. And, you know, the success that we have had, the diaspora have had here, is based on the opportunity that previous generations of Irish immigrants were given. Nobody is looking for a handout. Nobody is looking for, you know, any type of assistance. Really, in my experience, that immigrants are coming here from all over the world to work hard, to set up the company, to create, to have their, you know, give their children opportunities to learn. And so the motivations are generally pretty pretty similar as to Irish immigrants of yesteryear. And so I think, you know, we need to remember that as well. You know, I was listening to the story Isle of Hope about Annie Moore coming over through Ellis Island 15, you know, and I think that I wonder what reception she would get today based on what we've seen. You know, if there's children like her at the border now, and they're not getting welcomed at all. And so I just think that we need to remember our history as well. And I think that hopefully we'll take that coming into this election. And I would just encourage everyone who is eligible, obviously US citizens only, green cards holders are not able to register to vote or to vote. But if you're eligible, just make it a priority.
Thank you so much, Fiona McEntee, the founder and managing partner of the McEntee Law Group. Your insights and your inspiration about the American dream that is immigration, that it's not us and them, it's us and us, and every person has a story. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you all for joining us for this first episode of Irish American Politics. And again, I'm your host, Gina London, and I look forward to seeing you next week for our next episode. Thanks again.